Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
Arlene McFarlane.
Yes, we do. It was such a fun interview. She's so delightful.
She is. We talked a lot about incorporating what you do in real life into your fiction and how that gives you authenticity and perfectionism and dealing with that. And she has some really neat marketing ideas, just kind of out of the box things that most people don't think of doing.
And I think one of the things she said was, you know, just taking chances on things, you know, just trying things. And if they pay off, that's awesome. If they don't pay off, that's okay. You just go on to the next thing, you know. And I love that attitude, you know, of just sticking with it and keeping going, even when, you know, if things don't work out, try something else. So,
yeah. And she's not a fast writer. She was more she's like, I'm a slow and steady and, you know, kind of just, I loved her mentality that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it at a pace that I'm comfortable with. That you don't have that kind of hectic.
I
must get this book out.
I sort of, when she was talking, I was thinking she just kind of puts her blinders on and does her thing. And I love that. I love that attitude.
Very healthy.
Yes, it is. It is. So we have a new supporter this week.
Yes, we do. We have Jocelyn Westbrook, and she chose The Scales of Justice.
Yes, yes. Even though I'm pretty sure Jocelyn writes romance, so that's pretty funny. She must be an Enneagram one. That's funny. But we appreciate it so much, you guys supporting us. We just really, really love it. And it really means a lot to us and tells us that you really enjoy the show and enjoy what we do. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. And if you want to support the show, you can go to wishidknownforwriters.com/support and sign up there. And we just did a supporter chat as we record this. It was the weekend prior, and that was fun. We'll probably do another one. Probably, I think we're going to do this maybe once a quarter.
It'll be fun.
So that will be coming up. And I do have something I was going to share. It's nothing. I mean, it's just something I thought we could talk about because I just thought it was really interesting. So Taylor Swift, there was an article, you know, she's an amazing, just everything she does is just amazing. But there was an article about her in the New York Times, and this was the pull quote. And I just thought it was interesting. She's become one of the new breed of post-media celebrities who have a new set of rules of engagement with both the media and the fans. Technology has risen to meet these new rules. And it describes, you know, like she's kind of circumvented the old way of like having to do publicity. So this was the pull quote for me. It says, the Eras Tour is its own cycle, its own tabloid, its own Tumblr, its own news release. And as we find out in a few weeks, its own movie set. So basically, the whole premise of the article was like, can the New York Times offer Taylor anything? No, because she's kind of created her own world and her fans are there for her and whatever she does. And I know that most of us will not reach this level of fan engagement or success, but it is interesting to look at it and see that like she doesn't have to depend on other people or other organizations. She can just do her thing and her fans support her. It's just, I just thought it was very interesting.
I love that. I mean, she has really created her own ecosystem where she functions and her fans function and kind of don't worry about anybody yet.
Yeah, and whatever goes on, but it's not going to impact her. Like her fans are there. They're not going to be swayed by an article or whatever.
Love that. Love that. I love that quote. That's great. That's great. Anything else going on with you this week?
So I've got the paperback books in for the Kickstarter. So yay, those will
be signed. I see boxes behind you.
I have so many boxes everywhere. I had a podcast the other day. I'm It'll come out later and I'll mention it when it comes out. But I moved everything because it was video and I'm not used to, like, I was like, oh no, I have to go clean up my desk in my office. But yes, the books are here for the paperbacks. I'm still waiting the hardbacks. I'll sign the paperbacks and send those out this week. So yeah, that's kind of wrapping up. And I'm kind of thinking about, I'm ready. Like you were saying the other week, you're ready to get back to writing, and I'm ready too. It's like, I've taken some time and done this and I've really enjoyed it. Right. And now I'm ready to get back into the books. I'm starting to think about my characters again and just kind of debating like what I'm going to have happen in the next book. And
I've been writing this week and well, I'm going through the 25,000 words of that book that the rom-com that I had started. And, you know, I've made myself laugh a couple of times and that's always good.
That's good.
You know, it's got some problems, but it's first draft. But I was thinking last night, like it is, you know, like, honestly, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty solid. But for me, there's so many more layers of
that you want to
emotional depth that I want to add and stuff that I'm like, oh yeah, like this is the difference between some authors and stuff. I mean, there's probably nothing wrong with this book. Like I said, it's got some problems, but those are mostly plot things. They're not really emotional or character things, but it's just not ready for me. And so we all have our different level of what we consider okay and ready to go. We talked about this with Arlene. And so, but it's not bad. It's not bad. I can definitely work with it. So that's awesome.
That's a good feeling, right? Because it's been a while since you looked at that.
Been a while. Yeah. Yeah. And then I also wanted to mention, and I wish I had done this last week, but I forgot. Last Wednesday, as we're recording this, the two authors chat show, I was a guest on their podcast and it came out and it was just so fun talking with Doug Pratt and Nick Harvey, and we had a great time. So we'll put that link in the show notes. And I still don't have my Facebook account back, but I did, when I went in to try to log in, it showed some notifications. So we're hoping that means that we're moving closer. Evidently, I mean, literally, y'all, it was less than 5 minutes between when I got hacked and when Facebook shut me down, and evidently they did a very deep takeover of my account.
Wow.
And I know, very strange. So I am hopefully in the next week or so I get it back, but I've had some moments, you know, but I'm okay. You know, it is what it is. I can't do anything about it. And I've had to just let that go and concentrate on the things I can do things about. So that's what I'm doing. But yeah. Anyway, so. But we should, I put my blinders on just like Arlene does.
So you have had a unplanned social media fast.
Yes,
weren't really ready for that one.
Well, you know, it's funny because, I was thinking that yesterday, like, but it's just like I still have my Instagram and I still have my Twitter. TikTok, but I did not, it's a little different than Facebook. You know, I have realized the difference in Facebook and those two things. And so, I've kind of missed it. So that's good though.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. It's coming back.
Hopefully. So anyway, we should get on with the interview with Arlene. It's really great. And you guys are going to love it.
Yes. Here is Arlene. Well, today we are super excited to talk to Arlene McFarlane. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're awesome. And we're so happy you're here. You look lovely. We rolled out of bed.
Because
we did.
Arlene always looks amazing. Arlene always looks amazing. I think I met you at the Cozy Con, and she just always looks fantastic.
Thank you.
Let me read your bio and we'll get started. Arlene McFarlane is a USA Today bestselling author of the Murder Curler series. She's won and placed in over 30 contests, including the Reader's Favorite Book Awards, the Golden Heart, and the Daphne du Maurier Award. She's also received a Voice Arts nomination for her audiobook, Murder, Curlers, and Cream. The nomination landed her in LA, where she walked the red carpet at Warner Brothers Studio. Wow. Previously an anesthetician, Arlene still dabbles in the beauty industry. She's also an accomplished pianist. When time allows, she plays publicly and posts the odd makeover on her website. Arlene lives with her family in Canada.
Awesome. Well, that explains the loveliness of your being. Tell us how you got into writing.
Well, I started when I was pregnant with my daughter, Eden. I figured it was something I could do from home. And I had a beauty salon for years, but mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to be home with my children when mm-hmm. I had started with my family, our family. So and that's how I started writing. And right away, I started writing picture books, and I actually did get a contract with a Connecticut publisher. Mm-hmm. But then they folded before my book mm-hmm. saw the light of day. And then that's when I thought, I'm going to try and write a novel. So I wrote a novel, and I got an editor from Toronto, because I'm in Canada, like you said, and he, a quite well-known editor, and he read it and he said, I had a very strong voice, but he said I needed to work on structure and plot. And mm-hmm. so you're too close to it to really see what others see. And he was right. That's something I had to learn. And I did as time went on. So.
And what genre was it, the adult book?
It was similar to what I write now. It was actually a cozy idea, but it was in the voice of a male. Mm. And he was a chauffeur for a very rich family, and he comes across these dead bodies. And so it was him solving it. So every once in a while, I think I'd like to go back and rewrite it, fix it up. But my series is keeping me busy. And after I get a book out, the fans are like, when's the next book coming out? Mm-hmm. And I haven't had time to even stop to think about it. You know how readers can read a book in a day or two, and it takes you much longer to write a book. So, but I would, every once in a while, I think I would like to revisit that. The Chauffeur Who Rode Shotgun, that was the name of that book that I wrote. So, but that, then I switch gears, and, you know, they say, write what you know. And the beauty industry was what I knew, and I mm-hmm. loved lighthearted comedy mysteries. Yes. So I thought, I'm put the two together and have this beautician solve crimes using her tools in MacGyver-like ways. So, and throw some slapstick comedy in, and it's what it's like. You love entering that world, and I love visiting my characters every day.
That's awesome.
Well, what is your definition of success?
Well, I guess knowing that my books have reached a wide audience and are read and loved, and reaching milestones like hitting USA Today was great. Mm-hmm. And walking the red carpet, that was, it was wonderful. When I put my book out in audio, the narrators who narrated the book, they're actors. And the one, in fact, had done a movie with John Travolta, but they also mm-hmm. do audios on the side. And when they were done doing book one, he emailed me one day, and he said they had such a blast producing this book. He said, you mind if we enter into the SOVAs? And I didn't know what the SOVAs were. And the SOVAs stands for, Society of Voice Arts mm-hmm. Awards. So I said, sure, go ahead. They entered it, and we were nominated. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really mean anything to me, because I didn't know this world. But when I looked at the nominee list here, Tom Hanks was on this list for voicing over for Toy Story, and Gerard Butler for How to Train Your Dragon, and Joan Cusack and Keanu Reeves and Annie Potts and Tim Allen. All these actors were nominated. And I thought, this is amazing. And then you scroll down to the audiobooks, and there's my name with my narrator. So mm-hmm. I thought, this is amazing. So they invited us to walk the red carpet at Warner Brothers for this whole award ceremony. So it was quite exciting. And so things like that really, that's when you, you know, definition. I guess it's little milestones like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an experience that most authors will never have, which is very cool.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. I love that. So, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you started? I mean, you said the editor had a few.
Yes, it was structure.
A few suggestions.
Yes. So structure was the main thing. And then I joined Romance Writers of America and I started, you know, you go to conferences. I mean, conferences, you go to workshops and sit in and listen to panels and enter contests. And so after doing those things, it was like, now, you know, things start to make sense. And when I was first entering contests, I got told a lot that my heroine is a bit snarky, and I thought she was just funny. But after getting that same feedback over and over, I thought, okay, I have to soften my heroine. And so I softened her and gave the sarcastic lines to her sidekick. And the readers love Max because they expect those one-liners from him. At the same time, I could keep her soft and more likable. And then I started winning contests, and it was like, that's all it took, you know?
Yeah.
And then of course, learning structure, sequence, and that sort of thing. And then it all started to fall together and into place. And so, yeah, that definitely, the structure, but that's something that has to be learned along the way.
So. Yeah.
You have to
do it, right? You can read all about it and take classes and courses, but then when you sit down to write, you've got to incorporate that yourself, and it's a skill that you have to learn. So
right, yes, and pacing, and yes, everything. So
yeah. Well, what about marketing? What do you wish you'd known about marketing?
Probably that it was foolproof when you know when you like whether you're doing ads or whatever. But there's a lot of tinkering around, and you know, things you have to fine tune, and so I think that would be the biggest thing, that it would be foolproof. But I mean, there are so many different ways to market your book. So that's something else I've learned along the way too.
Right. And we're going to talk about that later, but yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah. I mean, it's true that, you really have to get in there and figure out what works best for your audience and your books and things like that. And it takes some time to do that. Well, what assumptions did you make at the beginning of your writing career, and looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
Well, probably that putting a self-published book out meant that you would have instant success. But when I published, I sort of missed that, you know, the gold rush or the bandwagon that in 2012, 13, I didn't publish until 2016. And by then, and I wasn't quite ready, and I just didn't want to throw a book out because I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And I just, you know, I just wanted to make sure it was the best I could do. And 2013, I just wasn't convinced of that. And I, you know, maybe I did miss the bandwagon, and I don't know what would have happened if I had thrown a book out there at that time, because there wasn't as much out there. Maybe it would have taken off even then. But I know. And then by the time I got my book out, then the market was saturated, and then it was a lot harder to, you know, find your place. So
right.
Yeah, but you have found your readers now, I think, right?
Yeah.
You feel like
yes, and it's always growing. But yes.
But I think one of the advantages of publishing when you and I did, because I published the year after you, is that we sort of had to, we knew that marketing was part of the process when we started. We're back in the gold rush. They could just, you know, they could put a book up and they didn't really have to do anything. And a lot of those authors either dropped out because they didn't want to learn marketing, or it was a big learning curve for them. And we sort of came into it knowing that was something we were going to need to do at some point. And so I think that it would have been nice to publish during that time when you just put a book up and, you know, but I think we have an advantage sometimes over people who published early and then had to come back and learn some things.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it is unfortunate that, and I've heard that before, that a lot of authors that early on, that they sort of just went by the wayside after, or gave up, you know.
Well, I wanted to go back, and you touched on perfectionism, and like, that's something that people, I mean, I have this tendency too. It's like, I don't want to let go of something, but how do you decide this book is good enough to go out, that I'm comfortable? Yeah. How do you know when you hit that point and you're okay letting it out in the world?
Right. Well, I have an excellent editor. she edits for a lot of New York Times bestselling authors. And so she is fantastic when it comes to content development. And I write my book and I think, oh, this, you know, hits all the points and everything else. And she'll come back with, you know, why don't you insert something like this here? Or what about pulling this into the story and, or coming back to this? And like I said, I think I've got everything covered, but when she presents these things to me, it's like, oh my goodness, that's making for such a better, tighter story. Mm-hmm. And so then I, you know, incorporate most of her ideas into the story. And it's just, like I said, it just becomes a fuller, much more rounded read. And I'm not a fast writer, so I take my time. I it's not worth it to me to have, quantity over quality. And because I'm a perfectionist, even after she edited it, I have a professional proofreader, Kristen Higgins' mom. She actually, in her day, she worked for, I think, editor for a magazine. And so she still does this on the side. And she is excellent when it comes to proofreading. And then I go over my manuscript again and again. And when I put it out there, I challenge anyone to find an error in my book. It's so important that I have it because, again, I know from what I've heard with readers and that a lot of authors, they're rushing to get the next book out and there's gaping errors. And that is so important to me not to have. And I mean, you can always go back and open the book up again and and fix it. But I just, it's important to me to know that by the time I'm ready to publish, it's as good as I can make it. So,
And you want to feel confident in that, right?
Yes.
When you send it out, you don't want to be like, oh, I hope nobody finds 45,000 typos, you know? So I can understand that. Yeah. I kind of the same way.
Yes. And then also knowing that the plot is, everything is answered in the end, all the loose threads are answered and the plot is.
Yeah. There aren't any huge plot holes that didn't get plugged. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So all those things incorporated, that makes it important. So
that's good advice on how to handle that. So what is the most important lesson you've learned?
I guess probably that writing's not for the faint of heart and you really have to have determination. I think that's in sticking with it. You know, I'm determined to, I love it. It's a passion and, you know, I could have given up many times over the years. It's frustrating that you try your best, you put your work out there, but it is hard to compete with big names because I realize they can spend a lot more money on advertising. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, they take up those places in the advertising world that your books just, you don't get that visibility the same.
Right.
So, I'm determined to stick with it. And because I love it so much, I remember Stephen King saying, don't write because you think you're going to get a book published, write because it's what you want to do and because you love it. And that is exactly why I do it. But of course, it is nice to have fans. And you know, when you have fans, they are so dedicated and it's a wonderful feeling to have that. So definitely it's writing's not for the faint of heart or publishing the whole business.
Really the whole business. And just the hits that your psyche and your ego take, from sending things to your editor and them going, wait, we've got a real problem here to bad reviews, to whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's a hit. It's a, every time. And so you have to decide, can you deal with it? Can you live with that? Can you ignore the things you need to ignore and pay attention to the things you need to pay attention to?
Right.
And some people can't do that. You know, yes. I mean, it's just hard.
That's true. They say you need to develop a thick skin, and it is mm-hmm. true. I mean,
it is.
Everyone gets the great reviews and the not so great reviews, but it's right. it's just all part of it. So
right, I think really for me, one of the best lessons I've learned, and you know, I still struggle with it because if I get a bad review or something, it's like
still hurts,
stand.
Right?
Yeah, it still hurts. But it is that marketing is as much about repelling the wrong people as it is about attracting the right people. And so if you get a bad review, you just know one, that person's not coming back. That's, you know, you've repelled that person in a way that they're not coming back. And two, it authenticates the good reviews that you have. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you just have all good reviews, I mean, nobody's going to really
that looks
believe
fake.
That. Yeah, it does. It looks fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
the ones that bother me the most are, and this very rarely happens, but you notice the odd reader that will post a review on each book and they give you a 3, but they're loving the book. And I'm thinking, if they're loving the book, why are they giving you 3? And then on top of that, why do they keep reading the rest of the series?
Like, I know.
Okay, why did you stop? You know, to me, a 3 isn't I love the book. And when you read the review, it's like everything's pointing to loving it. So
yes.
Oh,
I know.
This is the problem with reviews because like we all have our own standards. And I know that there are some reviewers who are like, oh, I only give one 5-star review a year or ever, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe only one book achieves that. And so everything else is a 4 or a 3. Yes.
Right.
And then there's other people who give 5 stars for everything. So it's like we don't have a standard that we all agree to. So that just makes it even worse.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this before, but my least favorite are, you know, this book was entertaining, but there were some problems. I'll read the next book, and I'm just like, don't. It's not going to get better. It's going to be the same. You know.
Yeah.
So just don't. Just
give yourself and give me a break.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Move on, sis. So, what's the biggest change you've had to make in your thinking while you've been publishing?
Well, I think probably that I've had to get creative and figure out other ways to become visible. I do the usual, the marketing and all that, but ads and things, but it's mostly had to get creative in other ways. And, and that's exciting and it's fun. I enjoy, and you know, we are creative
people,
authors. And, and so to me, it's important to use the background that, my setting and my history and kind of make the most of that and work that through that avenue. So
I love that.
Well, let's get into that right now because you have a lot of really interesting ways that you sell your books. You've got, you do like in-person sales, not online direct sales, and you incorporate, like you said, your life and your background in your books and also in your selling. So tell us how you do all that.
Right. Well, one of the ways that I love doing craft shows, mostly at Christmas time or Mother's Day. So I'll set up a booth or a table, and it's interesting because at a lot of these craft shows, you don't really have authors. You might have one other one, a local author that maybe wrote a child's book or something, but so I don't run into that a whole lot. So if somebody is in the market for a book, you just don't know what you're going to see at a craft show. So, but those are a lot of fun. And I love getting out and talking with people because we're home all the time. I can be an introvert, because I can also be an extrovert. So I do love meeting people and being out there with the public. And the other way that I've marketed my books, especially when I was first published, I took 10 of my books, book one, that's all I had at the time. So I took 10 books and I went to beauty salons and I'd ask them if they would sell these 10 books. I gave the owner one for free and I'd ask if they would put these 10 books in the salon and sell them. And so I did that with about maybe a dozen different salons. I went to a few different towns, my old hometown and where I live now. And so it was nice. I left them there for a couple of months. And when I went back, they all sold the book. So it was great. It was just another way to get into salons. And being that was, again, the background of my my series, and use that. And a lot of salon owners that read my books, even when I get reviews, a lot of them are like, I'm a hairdresser and I really could connect and they could get the humor. And so I know if anyone does get the humor, it would be another hairstylist because they can see firsthand, you know, what. And I think it makes it more authentic when I know, you know, there's authors that will write books that might be about a beauty salon, but they don't have that background. And when I read some books, I can pick it up myself because there's just these little nuances or things that a hairdresser would know about that somebody wouldn't necessarily know when you're not in the industry. Like just for an example, in my current book, I have a place where my heroine is trying to defend herself and she holds up her knuckle. She says, you know, we all, any hairdresser will tell you, you know, it's part of the occupation that you will get scars on your knuckles. And I have little V scars on my knuckle here and my knuckle here, because when you cut hair, sometimes your fingers aren't, they're not straight and they're bent a little bit and the scissors will. So I've got a lot of V scars here and here. And in my book, I have, there's a spot where there's hairdressers standing in a circle and each one of them raised their knuckle to the cop. And they each display their, you know, their scars. And you know, I really, if you didn't have that background, it's maybe not something that you would think of. Like, so it's little things like that. And I appreciate some reviewers will even point out, you can tell that this person knows what they're talking about because it's my background. And so, and I know we can all do research, but when you're, same with nursing, you know, when you're right in there and you know what actually takes place in a hospital or on the ward, it's a little different than just doing research and trying to pick it up in a different way.
I
love that. And that like firsthand experience that gives, like, we lately, you know, AI is a thing and people are worried about that. But if you have life experiences that you can incorporate into your books, those are things that are going to set you apart from stuff that's like just generated that people are, you know, just if you can incorporate a little bit of you into your stories or your characters, that's going to make you more authentic. So, and I was going to say, I love the fact that you were doing this. Your book was about a beauty salon, or it has a salon in it. And so when people are getting their hair cut or waiting for their stuff to finish processing, they can pick up a book to pass the time. I mean, I think that's a great combo.
I love that. I love that. And it does lend that authenticity. It also brings the reader deeper into the story. I just think anytime you can layer authenticity into a story, you know, it just deepens the reader's experience. And I love that. Yeah. Well, we had Tracy Andrighetti on the podcast, and Tracy's a dear friend of mine and, or of ours, not just mine. And she talked about the co-writing you guys do. So can you tell us about that and how you got into it? And
yes, well, it was all during COVID. I was walking every day I walk. And one morning I thought, gee, what would it be like if four different heroines from different cozies came together in one book and solved a crime? And so I knew Leslie Langtree. I'd met her at a Barbara Vey Readers event. And her books are hilarious. So I thought, I got in touch with her, and I knew Diane Orgain just through cross promo, that sort of thing. And so I got in touch with her, and then I got to know Tracy through Diana. And so I presented this idea to them, and they were really excited to do this. And it was so much fun because the book one takes place in New York at a bachelorette party, and none of the sleuths know each other, but they all knew the bachelorette from a different time in their life. So they get to this bachelorette party. The bachelorette is missing, and somebody drops dead at the bachelorette party. Well, then during the party, they come to know each other and mm-hmm. what, you know, their history is, and they solve this crime. So it is just so much fun writing this series because we all have a different sense of humor and it just seems to work. It really mm-hmm. just goes together really well. And I also designed the covers of the books, and that I love the art part of being creative, not just mm-hmm. writing, but actual. Mm-hmm. So doing the covers for each book has just been so much fun because you put the little details that has to do with mm-hmm. like Frankie's character likes to drink liqueurs and that. So mm-hmm. if you have a little champagne or a little martini glass or something mm-hmm. and the pregnant one, like Kate, Diane Orgames Sleuth is pregnant or has had babies. And so she's always eating. And so it is just a lot of fun doing the covers and that. So yeah, that was another way too, that I thought, you know, in doing this series, I'll reach three other audiences mm-hmm. and they'll reach three other audiences. Mm-hmm. So it's like, to me, it was like a win-win for everyone. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do love that. And I love the fact that you took the initiative. You know, that's the thing I tell a lot of people when I'm consulting is like, you know, you could do this, you could initiate it. Brian Cohen, I think years ago, I remember him saying that that's really how he really got a lot of contacts in this business, was because he initiated and then set up author things because a lot of people don't want to do it. They want to do the project, but they don't want to set it up. And yeah. So the fact that you took the initiative and did that, I think that's awesome. And I think we should all really look at that more, because I'm sure it was a lot of work, but you know, if you get the right people, then you're all sharing the work in a lot of ways too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Plus it gets your name out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it helps spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for people who haven't heard Tracy's interview, can you mm-hmm. describe a little bit about how y'all write this? Like mm-hmm. that's because each of you writes a different right. chapters throughout the book, right?
Yes. And we meet and we try to put a loose outline together. And then we start, like in book one, I started the first chapter, and then the next author, I leave it in a little bit of a cliffhanger, and then the next author comes in and writes, sort of carries on, and mm-hmm. then, but it's in her voice, and you know it's her voice. Mm-hmm. And then we just keep, you know, as the next chapter, like if a chapter hangs at a cliffhanger, and my character enters, it's like I have her, sort of like the scene and sequel thing. That's mm-hmm. like she notices, you know, what has just taken place. And it's like, you know, now she gets into the action of what she's mm-hmm, going to do next. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun. We write in each other's voices then. So,
yeah.
Leslie likes to write a lot of political jokes and that. So it's a lot. It's a little challenging to write in her voice, but it's still fun because you really have to think, you know, you really have to right. think like her character. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then Diana's character is very sweet because she's pregnant. And mm-hmm. so it's and then Tracy's is more feisty. So mm-hmm. it is a lot of fun writing the humor for mm-hmm. and just writing each other's parts. And of course, mm-hmm. if there's something that one of us feels that our character wouldn't say or do, we just let them know. And we'll put a comment at the side, oh, Valentine would say or react mm-hmm. like this, or maybe it's not a word she would use. And mm-hmm. everyone's happy that it's always no problem. We've got to keep it real to our characters.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really works. There's a lot of my fans, they've read my series. And when they're waiting for my next book, they read the Bachelorette series mm-hmm. and, right. because they want more of my character. And, mm-hmm. and it's the same with the others too. It's nice. In fact, Tracy sent me an email the other day that a reader of hers had just finished one of her books, and Tracy asked if she's read any of the other authors, and she mm-hmm. said that she's read my books and she loves mm-hmm. Valentine. So it's kind of nice. And it happens with all of us. Some mm-hmm. Diana's care, mm-hmm. Diana's fans might have read Tracy's or mm-hmm. Leslie's, slowly they're all, you know, if they like their series, individual artist series, then most of the time they're going to read this new series mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. find other, you know, new authors to like. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like cross-pollination. Y'all are kind of like helping your readers find other authors who are similar. And I mean, it's really long-term thinking because it's like you're investing time in this. Because how many books are in the series now?
Well, we're working on book three right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, And the other thing that works too, it's like Tracy does the formatting and uploads it. So that's nice. Mm-hmm. Diana, she'll give her, you know, advice on marketing and I do the editing and I do the covers and, and that way we still get Noelle Higgins to do the final proof. And then of course I get it back and proof it again. And so it's nice. We all kind of chip in and do, and Leslie has her strengths too. So we all have different areas where we chip in and, so it's not, it's not all on one person to, to do everything.
Yeah. Sounds like a great experience.
It's been, it has been wonderful for sure.
Well, we've already talked a little bit about incorporating your life and your skills into your books. Is there any other advice or tips you could give people or anything you wish you'd known about writing about what you do in real life? As your, if that's going to be like your sleuth or your protagonist?
Well, I guess, you know, I just keep going straight and straight and narrow. I keep focused and keep writing the next. It's funny, like if I had to start, if I had to start over and do everything, I would probably would do everything the same. I said before, I'm not a real fast writer, so I can't compete with, you know, putting 8 or 10 books out every other month. So, it, you know, I just keep giving the fans what they like. And, you know, I wish I could write faster because I do want to get the books out. And, you know, I know with this AI coming in, it's like, wow, that really is going to be a game changer. But I really want to keep to my own, you know, where it's coming from me, the books are coming from me and I'll just keep working the best I can. And yeah, just moving forward one book at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. And putting your authentic spin on whatever you write. And I think that's really what we can all do, you know, just being our, as comfortable as we are being our authentic self in our writing and, and our marketing.
Yeah. And obviously things like applying for BookBub and things like BookBub is actually what really put me on the map. When I first came out with book one, I had like 100,000 downloads in 2 days.
Oh,
like it was amazing. And that, and that just the whole week was just fantastic. I think I had it up for 2 weeks. So even though it was a freebie, that really helped. You know, I know people download the book and then some will set it aside, but then there's others that went on to read book two and book three. You know, I think I only had maybe two books out at the time. But if you get a fan, you know, often they're a fan for life. So things like that, that was a, you know, I've often said to people, if you can get a BookBub, I know that has even changed. Like, I don't know if it's as, you know, as powerful as it was at one time. But anyways, I did hit it at a good time and I was very thankful for it when I had it. So things like that, you know, definitely something else will come around too, probably.
Yeah. And I think you just do the kind of tried and true until something new comes around, you know, just keep plugging, keep trying, you know, I've never gotten one personally, so I can't speak to that.
But you can keep trying.
I'll just keep trying.
Well, because it's interesting. Another author friend said she never got one either. And I said, hey, have you ever commented in the comment section? She said, no. And didn't she comment in the comment section? And next time she got a BookBub.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if that was luck or what, but I thought, make use of everything.
I do everything, you know, except offer them my firstborn. So, but I'm in KU, so I'm sure that has something to do with it. Well, this has been so great and we've loved having you on, but tell us what you think is the best thing you've done to set yourself up for success?
Well, I think, like I said, applying for BookBub, doing things like putting my books in audio that you just never know what you have done or will do that may, you know, lead to something else. And like the audio books, I had no clue that that was even a world, these sovas, and you know, all of a sudden then I'm flying on a plane and I'm going and I'm walking the red carpet. And it was like, wow, like things like that. I just, to me, trying anything that comes your way that, I mean, if you feel it's something that you're comfortable with doing. And I just thought that that is something that definitely speaks to me. And so, yeah, definitely doing things that when you get the opportunity, and if something looks like it's something that would appeal to you, definitely go for it. So,
yeah. Yeah. Taking chances. And
yes, for sure.
Yeah. I love them. Yeah.
Well, this has been so much fun to talk to you and see you again. So where can people find out more about you?
Well, my website is www.arlenemcfarland.com. So definitely check it out.
Okay.
All right. That's great. Well, we have just enjoyed having you here.
Thank you, Jamie. So it's so nice chatting with both you and Sarah. You guys are just awesome.
Thanks.
Thanks. Well, we'll have the link in the show notes, and those will be at wishidknownforwriters.com. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link, but /support. And we wanted to thank Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast, and Adriel Wiggins for doing the admin. And we'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.